You're listening to a podcast from 702.
You're with Clement Maniatella.
702.
So, let's now look at the state capture report, the final report that was released by the chairperson of the inquiry, of the state capture inquiry, Raymond Zondo. And there are questions that were asked. Did President Cyril Ramaphosa do enough to fight state capture while he was deputy president? Did the ANC deal with the influence of the Gupta family on its president and leaders? And did Parliament exercise its oversight responsibility to deal with that influence? That's what the state capture inquiry was asking. And sadly, the answer to all these questions is an emphatic no. That's the finding of the inquiry. The chairperson, in his final state capture report released this week, says, had all of these people, had the president spoken out, had the ANC investigated claims of the Gupta's influence, had Parliament exercised its oversight responsibility, we wouldn't be where we are today. And today we are zooming into what the report says about the president, the ANC and parliamentary oversight. We're going to start with what it says about the president and the ANC. And Kanita Hunter is going to help us go through this. She's a political editor at News 24. Kanita, thank you for making time. Good morning.
Thank you, Clement, for having me.
So, what did he know? When did he know? And what did he do about it? That's all the State Capture Commission was really interested in, right? When looking at the period when President Cyril Ramaphosa was deputy president to Jacob Zuma. And the president himself told the commission he had a few options when he learnt about state capture, and one of them was to speak out. But he said he would have been removed and unable to prevent state capture. So he chose to remain and resist. And in this report, Raymond Zondo seems not to be impressed with that option that the president chose.
Absolutely. And I mean, it's quite telling what the chairperson of the inquiry, Chief Justice Raymond Zondo, said about the president's defense. Now, let's go back to those years of state capture. President Cyril Ramaphosa was deputy president from 2014 to 2018, and he was ANC deputy president from 2012. He was in the nexus of the presidency when state capture was taking place. And his defense was that they didn't always see things happening because things in government under the Zuma administration happened in silo. He made the argument consistently when criticized about what did you do? He says he chose to fight from within. That argument was not bought by the Chief Justice, who said, you didn't do enough, because staying in office, state capture already happened. So what would it have cost you to just left? And that would have enabled, the Chief Justice said, other people who were speaking out against state capture would have given them some courage as well. And he says, what would have been the worst consequence had former President Jacob Zuma fired you? And that is a question, we've constantly asked President Cyril Ramaphosa. And the Chief Justice said, he just simply did not act enough to avert it or to play a role in that. And then there's the important thing that, we often forget, which is the fact that President Cyril Ramaphosa was chairperson of the Deployment Committee at the time when the Deployment Committee was complicit in appointing, the architects of state capture, the likes of Brian Molefe, the likes of Arnold Singh, etc., to state-owned enterprises. And then the important thing is the fact that there are no minutes for the Deployment Committee meetings during that time when Ramaphosa was the chairperson of that committee, which points to the fact that now we don't know how much he actually resisted, because there's just no evidence that we have to take him on his word. And then the Chief Justice says that's not enough.
Yeah, and I mean, one of the things you've got to ask is him fighting from within, how has that helped? Because state capture continued during the time that he was resisting, and there were consequences on the economy, on government, on our society, and they were so severe. And that's what the State Capture Commission mentions. And also, he says things were also silent at some point. He said, and I quote, in fact, this is what the report says. It says, Ramaphosa mentioned very little in the way of personal first-hand evidence and stressed that those involved in state capture conducted their business in secret, end quote. And That's the thing, right? The president claims things were in secret, you know, because, but the commission says no, there was substantial media coverage about the Guptas. There was enough credible information in the public, including Fikile Mbalula's revelations of what happened, even the Waterkloof Air Force Base. And the commission says all of that clearly should have indicated to you how deeply entrenched the state capture project is. Let's talk about the high-level review panel that looked into the state security agency, because the president claimed that the implementation of that high-level review panel is at an advanced stage. And we know what the panel said about David Mahlobo, that he presided over the state security agency at the time when it showed an almost complete disregard of the constitution, of policy, of legislation, and other prescripts. And yet, President Cyril Ramaphosa appointed David Mahlobo as his deputy, and also redeployed Arthur Fraser to the correctional services, even though that high-level review panel found that, you know, Fraser was involved in serious allegations when it comes to that PEN program. And that's one of the things that they questioned him on.
So, I mean, Clement, the president, since, you know, taking over, consistently maintained that he is implementing this reform agenda, and he's sort of cleaning up after the 9 years of state capture, and he would point to reforms at the NPA and etc. But the most bizarre thing, and it was captured so succinctly by the commission in that final report, is why would you commission a panel? You set up, you bring together experts to say, tell me what is wrong in the state security agency, tell me what went wrong, and tell me how to fix it. And they go and they do their work, and you accept the report. You take it. You don't query the report. You don't review the report. You accept the report by Sydney Mufumadi. But then you do nothing about it.
Mm.
And in not implementing that report, you also completely disregard its recommendations, that people that you then subsequently appoint are heavily implicated in that report. And when we are, and I mean, Clement, you will recall this, how many times we've asked the president after he, you know, he appointed his executive in 2019, when he decided to transfer the former DG of State Security Agency out of the Correctional Services. And he kept skirting around these issues, and the president consistently said, he may have not said it, but there was this kind of excuse and assertion that, you know, he was the victim of ANC politicking and he was the victim of the Thuli House, and, you know, he had to play his political cards well. And the commission just doesn't buy it, because he says, you know, these people had these findings against them.
Mm.
It's a report that you commissioned. Mm. You've accepted the report. So in other words, that is the truest manifestation that you were complicit, and you you were okay, and you with what happened during those years, when literally the state security agency was completely pillaged, when it was completely looted, and you endorsed those actions by keeping those individuals within your executive and within the state.
Yeah.
And so what this final report does is that it really spelled it out about, yes, we know former President Jacob Zuma was, you know, at the heart of state capture. He was probably, you know, we could call the father of state capture with the Guptas. And I mean, that was just quite evident for us. But what this final report does, it spelled it out that the deputy president at the time was completely complicit, did not do enough to save the country. The ANC was completely complicit in this criminal enterprise, and Parliament played no role in protecting the country from that. And as you see since the report, you see Parliament and the ANC digging in the same type of behavior, where, you know, you kick the can down the road instead of dealing with a serious issue at hand.
No, absolutely. And in fact, the president, if I remember correctly, admitted that under the leadership of Mahlobo and Fraser, the state security agency was compromised and operated under the milieu of state capture. Hence, the commission is asking, if that is your reflection of their time at the state security agency, that reflects on their competence and integrity. So it is therefore really difficult to understand how they could reasonably be considered suitable for deployment to senior positions in the state. So the president was playing the political game here, but you, as South Africa, was now at risk because he's appointing these people. Look at what Arthur Fraser has done, where he's even ignoring, right, a panel from health experts and then takes a unilateral decision to release Jacob Zuma on parole. Those are the consequences. You didn't need anybody to tell you that this could happen. The evidence was always there about how problematic these characters were, but the president continued to redeploy these people. Kanita Hunter, thank you so much for making time. Kanita also touched on the CADA deployment because that's what the commission looked at, because the report raises a serious concern that CADA deployment may have played a role in facilitating corruption and state capture. Yes, Gwede Mantashe and the president defended that committee because the purpose of it is to ensure that key people are fit for purpose and are appointed into critical positions. But the state capture inquiry really believes that this committee falls outside the constitutional and statutory framework for appointment, promotion, and transfer of public servants and its candidates. I want us to look at parliamentary oversight now with Mariam Mertin, who is an associate editor at Daily Maverick. Mariam, thank you so much for making time. Good morning.
Good morning, of course, anytime.
So President Cyril Ramaphosa admitted at the inquiry that, and I quote, there was a dropping of the ball at that level, referring to Parliament. Parliament has this constitutional obligation to exercise oversight over the executive, yeah, which is accountable to Parliament. But when there were revelations of state capture and some of the executives were involved, Parliament didn't step in to hold those executives accountable. Just take us through what happened and where Parliament failed.
It's a huge topic, and it goes back years. Can I just start maybe at this point? The fact that the president did acknowledge that there was a dropping of the ball actually came after quite some minute and quite intense interactions with Chief Justice Zondo at the time when he was making presenting his testimony. So I think that in itself is quite important, because at the initial stage it was yes, there may have been inertia, but we thought other processes would take care of these issues, and then we realized not. And both the president as well as Gwede Mantashe appearing before Zondo Commission in his capacity as ANC national chairperson, mm-hmm, made a lot out of the fact that ANC MPs, any MP, not even the DA or the EFF MPs, are in Parliament on a party ticket.
Yeah.
And by doing so, both the president and Gwede Mantashe as ANC national chairperson emphasized party loyalty above all. And I think it's important that we sketch that background, because it does inform some of the issues and some of the matters that played out at Parliament. Now, you would hear from the opposition benches that they've asked questions during ministerial and presidential Q&A sessions in the House. And you would have the opposition, whether that's the DA, the EFF, the UDM, all of them saying that, but we did ask questions, written questions also. We did try and do, and that's where, for example, the State Capture Commission report will bring up in 2016 that at the time it was DA MP David Menya got up in the House and requested an ad hoc committee, and he was defeated, of course. So there are certain things, and one of the dynamic is that up until now the ANC has the majority of seats in Parliament.
Yes.
And given the background that both the president and Gwede Mantashe sketched out quite in detail before the Zondo Commission of Inquiry into State Capture, it's clear for the purpose is it is party loyalty.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, does
sorry, finish that point first, Marian.
Yes, sorry. So I was just coming back. I mean, the State Capture Commission is very clear, and so yes, for example, when we heard from
Tequila Mbalula that the Guptas congratulated him on becoming a sports minister before he was told that he was doing that. And we had the media reports and other reports around that NEC meeting where this was raised in 2011. We had the Waterkloof Air Force Base landing for the Gupta wedding. I recall as a journalist at the time, Gwede Mantashe was Secretary General of the ANC at the time, and he very unusually signed off a very hard-hitting statement condemning that landing. But of course, then nothing happened, not within the ANC. And while opposition MPs will say that they and that they asked questions and all of that, nothing happened in Parliament. On this point, I just also wanted to make is that the Chief Justice Raymond Zondo highlighted two instances of where parliamentary oversight actually did happen. And I think it's important that, that we highlight that as well. So in 2016, there was a parliamentary SABC inquiry that did touch on some of the state capture allegations, the TNA breakfast, the role of the Minister of Communications at the time, Faith Mutambi, and passing on information, for example. And the State Capture Commission report very clearly says that this is an appropriate example of oversight, i.e. that's the kind of stuff that should happen all the time. And then, of course, we do have to mention also the public enterprises, Eskom State Capture Inquiry 2017. We heard some extraordinary testimony. I'm very often sitting literally until midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning. I mean, I remember leaving those public hearings. We heard from all the people that subsequently also testified before the State Capture Commission. And to be fair, that report from the public enterprises, Eskom State Capture Committee, was a hard hitting report. As early as November 2018, they were saying grossly negligent public enterprise ministers Malusi Gigaba and Lynn Brown must be referred to the Zondo Commission and must face criminal.
In fact, we'll be speaking to Zuki Sarant, who actually chaired that Eskom inquiry, because I mean, her life was threatened at some point.
Correct.
I want you to go back to that issue of party loyalty, because we've seen it so many times in these committees. Even after the Gupta leaks, Cedric Frolic at some point wrote letters to committees and told them to investigate the departments that are implicated and ministers, but not all of them responded. So when we talk about party discipline, our constitution is based on a party list proportional representation system. And the report acknowledges this and says party discipline is a legitimate and indispensable feature of a party-based democratic system. However, as you have seen, Maryam, a lot in Parliament, there's tension between that party discipline, the oversight obligation of MPs, and the oath of office taken by all these MPs. So how does this report suggest we fix that?
It does so very interestingly on a number of levels. And the important thing is we already have a constitutional court judgment as far back as 2017 that touches or that traverses some of the same ground. So it was the UDM that approached the Constitutional Court for a secret ballot in, I think, the last of the eight motions of no confidence in then-President Jacob Zuma. And the Constitutional Court said, yes, party discipline, yes, okay, that's how our system works. That's, the electoral system says that, you know, you need to be a candidate of a party. We don't have constituency elections, and the current electoral amendments that are before Parliament to allow independent candidates to stand are very narrow and very technicist. So the option of doing a wholesale electoral review, given that process, was bypassed, was not made use of. So the point is that already in 2017, the Constitutional Court says that when it comes down to it, party loyalty is second.
Yes.
Because everyone who comes to Parliament or who becomes a minister or anywhere, if you are an elected public representative, your oath of allegiance is to be loyal and to protect the Constitution and to serve South Africa.
Mm.
But you know, you're an incredibly experienced journalist, and you've got your finger on the pulse. You know, we are in an incredibly fractious, loud, and in some ways survivalist body politic, political system, where very often it is represented as a be-all and all. I mean, I remember the last motion of no confidence in August 2017 in Jacob Zuma. The ANC senior leadership came to Parliament, and the language that was used around a constitutional oversight mechanism, a motion of no confidence, the language that the ANC used was accusing the opposition of a regime change, of a coup d'etat. And in that kind of political noise, it's very difficult to focus. Coming back to the Cedric Follick letters in June 2017, that was a key enabler for Public Enterprises Committee to do its state capture ESCOM inquiry so successfully. I think the Chief Justice in the report talks about the courage and the determination of that committee. And the other committees didn't do so well. Transport, whose committee chairperson is now our Deputy Minister of Transport, basically cited legislative workload and really didn't do anything. The Mineral Resources Committee got as far as inviting the minister for a couple of interactions to the committee and got as far as doing terms of references, but never actually started an inquiry.
Yeah.
The Home Affairs Committee, and this is also very interesting now, because it talks to the political and the party loyalties, the Home Affairs Committee finally did start an inquiry after the Home Affairs chairperson was changed into somebody, you know, who was more prepared to be engaging and to pursue that mandate. Unfortunately, even though the Home Affairs Committee did write a report, it fell through the cracks.
Yeah.
So the report was ready just before the May 2019 elections. It wasn't adopted in the House. It fell away. The new post May 2019 election Parliament did not revive it. And so it fell through the cracks of some of the parliamentary proceedings and processes and protocols.
And that is the state that is the state of our Parliament. The number of other recommendations that the State Capture Commission looks at, and I'll go through some of those a little bit before we bring in our next guest, just after the latest in Eyewitness News headlines. Mariam Merton, Associate Editor at the Daily Maverick, always appreciate your time. Thank you.
Let's walk the talk.
This is Clement Maniatella
on 702.
24 minutes before 11 o'clock, I just want to take you through some of the key recommendations of that report when it comes to parliamentary oversight before I get to my next guest. Mariam did a great job in helping us understand just that whole issue around party discipline and what the constitutional obligations of these members of parliament are. And this conflict of MPs' oath and affirmation and party instruction was actually dealt with by the Constitutional Court. And it said, in an event of conflict between upholding constitutional values and party loyalty, the MP's oath or affirmation of faithfulness to the public and obedience to the Constitution and laws must take precedence. So the Constitutional Court has already said that. But here's what the State Capture Inquiry has recommended. They want us to move to a constituency-based system of proportional representation because that would have several advantages, right? It would help MPs exercise effective oversight without worrying about their parties. So you're accountable to constituents directly and not so much the parties themselves. The commission also recommends that Parliament should consider whether it would be desirable to enact legislation which protects members of Parliament from losing their party membership and therefore their seats for merely exercising their oversight duties reasonably and on good faith. Because sometimes parties will, if you are exercising your constitutional duty to the Republic and to the Constitution, and you believe you're taking a good decision in Parliament, and that contradicts your party position, often the party will take action against you. And by virtue of that, then you lose your seat in Parliament. You're not able to continue. So the State Capture Commission says, come up with rules that would protect members of Parliament from losing their party membership when they exercise that oversight duty. It's 22 minutes before 11.
702.
The Clemens Maniatela Show.
Let's walk the talk.
So we told you earlier that the State Capture Inquiry says that the ANC prioritized the survival and success of the party over acting on allegations of state capture. And the reference here is to the investigation that was started by and even stopped by Gwede Mantashe when he was Secretary General about the Guptas. It was after Mthembisi Jonas made the revelations. So one of the questions you've got to ask is, why did the ANC not act at the time? Dr. Nwakura Matlodi is a former Minerals Resources Minister. Dr. Ramatlodi, thank you for making time. Dumelang. I want to know, as an ANC NEC member, the report is quite scathing on the lack of action that the party took, even when you had revelations coming from Mthembisi Jonas. Just help us understand what was happening within the leadership structures of the ANC. Was there any interest to investigate the Guptas at the time when evidence was so clear they've got so much influence on the president and some of the ANC leaders?
Well, we didn't have much appetite, I must say, and that's what I said before the commission, to investigate these issues.
And why wasn't there that appetite?
Well, my impression is, let's repeat again what I said to the commission, was that there were too many of us who had a hand in that relationship with that family. And they were coalescing around the president and the officials in general. They were not innocent, because I've got an experience where there was some legislation which I needed to amend of the Minerals Act, and then I went to the officials, asked them to intervene to assist me to do so, and basically they did nothing about it, because the president wanted the matter discussed elsewhere with me, but that discussion never really took place. So yeah, I think there was no appetite for that reason, for those reasons. Yeah.
So how are South Africans supposed to rationalize that, especially because the State Capture Commission chairperson says, had the ANC played its role at the time and investigated these allegations of influence, we probably wouldn't be where we are now. So when South Africans are listening to you say there was no appetite whatsoever at the time, even though the evidence was so overwhelming, how are they supposed to rationalize that? I mean, will there be appetite the next time when there's something else that needs to be investigated that is of such great risk to this country?
Well, I suppose you have learned something. I believe we have grown as subsequent events did demonstrate, including the recall of the president at the time.
Let's take, for instance, what's happening currently. So I want to test that analogy of we have learned the lesson. So let's take Phalaphala, for instance. What conversations is the ANC having at the leadership structure to deal with this matter?
Well, we haven't convened a regular NEC to discuss matters that would include such as Phalaphala. The only meeting we have had was a special NEC last week, which was dealing with focusing mainly on the Gauteng Provincial Conference. and we're focusing principally on the issues that arose at Ekurhuleni conference
yeah.
a few weeks back, yeah.
Yeah, but is there appetite to deal with it? I know there are people that have raised the issue that maybe the president, for instance, would have to step down while these investigations continue. Is there appetite to deal with that and at least have a discussion about that? And is there something you supported in the meeting?
Protocol does not allow us to pronounce on what we say or don't say in the NEC. So in that sense, my hands are tied. Or even to say who said what, who didn't say what. Because there have been too much leakages of the NEC meetings, and I'm not willing to be part of people who leak information from the NEC.
Yeah, and part of the leakage was that you are one of those that supported the principle of him stepping down. I think you confirmed that to the City Press.
Well, I didn't confirm anything to the City Press. I said I've got a view, and I want to repeat what I said in the NEC. All I said was that I had a view that the president will have to relook at his situation with the view of stepping aside, allowing the processes to go.
All right.
That is the view I have.
Mm-hmm. Just lastly, before I let you go, when you spoke out against the Guptas in the NEC meeting, what was their reaction? What did you say at the time about this family, and when was it? And how did your former colleagues take it?
We're split in between. And I suppose there are still elements of that within the NEC. So it becomes very difficult when you are talking to people who have caucused a position and it is clear they've arrived at a decision. So you can't persuade anybody. At the end, you end up just keeping quiet.
Dr. Nwakura Matlodi, former Mineral Resources Minister, thank you so much for making time.
You're with Clement Maniatella.
7:02.
All right, 13 minutes before 11 o'clock. My next guest is Zukiswa Ranto, who is the former chairperson of Parliament's Eskom Inquiry. When you read the state capture report, you see these two examples that even Miriam mentioned of Parliament having demonstrated, right, their effectiveness to exercise oversight over the executive. And that was through the SABC inquiry and also through the Eskom inquiry. But even with that, these two inquiries, the people who chaired these inquiries often were criticized by their comrades for allowing the kind of witnesses to come and the kind of revelations that came through. And Zukiswa Ranto herself was at some point even her family threatened because of that role that she played as the chairperson of that inquiry. Zukiswa Ranto, thank you so much for making time. Good morning.
Good morning, and good morning to your viewers.
How difficult was it to, one, consider the constitutional obligation you have to the Republic and to the Constitution as you exercised that oversight responsibility versus you being a party member of the ANC and you have to exercise discipline and go with the instruction of the ANC?
Oh, thank you very much for allowing me to be part of you. It was a little bit difficult because it was going to be the first time that we do it in Parliament, the inquiry that we did as Public Enterprise Portfolio Committee. It was the first time, so there were a lot of things that we could not get. For example, there were no resources. Parliament had not enough resources for the work that was in front of us. We did not have enough researchers. We did not have enough content advisors and all those that we needed that much. That was the difficulty that we had. Otherwise, as a committee, together with ANC members who were part of the committee, there was no reluctance for us to do the job. We were all willing to do the job for as long as we will get the support that we wanted.
Did you get the support you wanted? Because some people felt at the time that that position and you taking up that role was career limiting, because you had people that were concerned about protecting the image of the ANC. I think at some point Advocate Vanara approached you and said Bongani Bongo approached him and demanded that he step down as evidence leader and collapse that Eskom inquiry, because some of the ANC members were beginning to be concerned about what revelations are going to be out there and what the impact is going to be on the ANC.
The resources will never be enough. There was no money. Even during the times that we had to do a normal oversight, going maybe to Eskom, going to FAA, and all the entities that were under us, there were no enough resources. We were keep on told that there is no money for us to do the oversight and everything. So it is because of the resources that were not there. That is why we took long, because we started the negotiations of the inquiry on the 23rd of May, but we ended up starting the inquiry at the end of, towards, I think on the 17th of October, towards the end of the year.
Okay.
So those, it's the resources that made us not to be able to work to our capacity.
Yeah, and the State Capture Commission does recommend that the issue of resources, even in skills in Parliament, be
yes.
dealt with directly. So as the
yes.
chairperson of the Eskom inquiry, as revelations were coming out, because some of them were really shocking, of how
yes.
Eskom was run, the reality is there were a lot of ANC members or people that were appointed by the ANC government that were implicated in that inquiry. So what was the instruction from the party? And as party members, was there a time when you were uncomfortable of the image of the ANC that is being sort of brought into question because of the revelations that were coming out?
Yes. You know, in Parliament, there's a structure called the Whippari that is led by the Chief Whip. The Chief Whip then was Jackson Tembo. Jackson Tembo and the Whippari were behind us to do our job. It is then that we saw, there were ANC members who were against us working, but it was not the majority of the ANC members who expressed their dissatisfaction. So with the help of the Chief Whip pushing us to do our job as a portfolio committee in the ANC, so we had to do what we were instructed to do by the then Chief Whip, Comrade Mthembu.
Zukiswa Rantu, former chairperson of Parliament's Eskom inquiry, thank you for making time. Let's bring in Natasha Madzoni, who is the DA Chief Whip in Parliament. Natasha, thanks for making time. Good morning.
Clement, thank you so much for having me on. Always a pleasure.
So the State Capture Commission mentions the DA several times when it talks about Parliament's oversight responsibility, because as the DA, you've tried to get Parliament to establish different ad hoc committees. And in the context of the Guptas, there was an attempt to get Parliament to establish an ad hoc committee to investigate the influence of the Gupta family, but the ANC used its majority to reject that. There are many other times when you've asked Parliament to investigate other things and the ANC was just using its majority to reject those proposals. How frustrating is it as a member of Parliament who wants to exercise that effective oversight responsibility, but you've got this organization that's using its numbers to say, we are not going to investigate that. And look at where we are now with State Capture. And Raymond Zondo says, had Parliament done its job and investigated the influence of the Guptas, we probably wouldn't be where we are now.
Absolutely, Clement. It was the most frustrating time of my life. If you read the affidavit that I handed up, which you referred to now, we on 17 different occasions asked for commissions of inquiry to be set up. What's interesting to note is when we finally got our commission going, it happened to be the same time as the elective conference of the ANC was going to take place. So there were already, you could see the factions within the ANC in the majority party. And those factions who were on the CR camp obviously wanted to prove that the Zuma camp had been firmly put in the Zuma in the Gupta's pockets. And then it was a lot more easy for us to get this committee going. But it got to the stage where the committee took matters into their own hands, and I'm very proud of it, and that's why we were known as Team South Africa. And we actually we were ready to have the committee live broadcast from the middle floor of Parliament. We were literally threatened to sit in the middle of the floor of Parliament and use our powers that we have as members of Parliament, because all members of Parliament have certain powers that are allocated to them according to the Powers and Privileges Committee, and conduct our inquiry with or without the assistance of Parliament. I remember a three-man delegation, but it was actually two women and one man. Going to see Cedric Frolic to demand that we had a properly established committee, an inquiry that didn't have boundaries, because we didn't know how far we would have to go, so we couldn't make it like the SABC inquiry, for example, which had certain legal limitations to it. And that's why we had an inquiry with a T instead of an inquiry with an I. And that allowed us to broaden our scope. So as people came into with the evidence that they gave us, we were then able to extend that and send summonses out to other people. And what is important to note, though, was that although Parliament did exercise its oversight duty, and the late Jackson and Tembu has a lot to be thankful, we have a lot to be thankful to him for, because he stood up for us at a time that it was very dangerous to do so. We still let people like Dudu Mayeni get away with refusing to be summoned to Parliament, which is a criminal offence. So she must still face a criminal offence charge for refusing to come to Parliament to testify. But I think what the Zondo Commission says is that Parliament has teeth, and these teeth can only be shown and can only be used when you put the majoritarianism that the governing party has aside, and you allow political parties to act in an equal fashion when it comes to issues that affect the entire country. And you can clearly see, I mean, everyone remembers how that Eskom inquiry rolled out, which was like watching The Bold and the Beautiful. People were stuck to their TV screens daily watching how things would unfold. And that's why when we did our affidavit and we submitted our information to Chief Justice Zondo, we also sent in the set of recommendations of parliamentary reforms, because there's no point that you complain about, you know, the way Parliament runs, but you don't offer a solution to the way Parliament runs.
Yeah.
And what I'm very pleased about is in Section 5 of Part 5, from Section 274 onwards, it's basically verbatim the recommendations that we sent in. Because what we need to do is we need to make sure that Parliament isn't a rubber stamping authority that just simply goes with the flow, and that Parliament actually does its work of oversight, which is damn difficult in certain circumstances. Because as you'll know, Daphne Runto, who you just spoke to, myself and many other people, we were in danger, we were followed, we were threatened. But that's the life of an MP. That's what you do. And when you're talking about the billions and billions of rands that we were dealing with, of course we were going to be threatened. And I'll tell you this honestly, Clement, none of us had the correct amount of protection we should have had. And how we are all alive today to tell the story is still, in my opinion, a piece of divine intervention.
Yeah, and then the commission does go into what needs to be done to even ensure that level of protection. Natasha Mazzoni, thank you for making time.